Maybe that's us. Are we back?
Yes, it is.
Okay, we're back. And Dinger, but you got Fish and Frank instead. You lucky little devils. And Robert in the chair across from me. And Captain Carl, KB Backcountry Charters. Now, Carl, you're into the redfish. What do you, when you go out, where do you look for redfish? What's a type of place you want?
Redfish, you could literally find them in so many different places. You could find them under docks. You could find them in the flats, the mangroves, offshore. But typically when I go out on a normal day, my personal best is the low tide. I love low water.
So now by low water conditions, what are you talking about? 6 inches, 12 inches, 18 inches?
About a half a foot to a foot is my favorite. It's a lot easier to find a fish, for one.
How do you find them with that low water? Are their backs coming out of the water?
Yeah, most of the time you could see them making big V's in the water. Sometimes they'll be tailing in very shallow water.
Now, tailing happens when a redfish sticks his nose down in the bottom and he's grubbing for shrimp or crabs, and he's literally just pushing the dirt away with his nose trying to find food in there. And because the water's so shallow, his tail's sticking out of the water and he's making a splashing sound. People associate that a lot with bonefish, and it's the same basic principle.
Yeah, if you see a tail in the water, you know that fish is feeding. Try to sneak up as quiet as you can. Don't cast right to the tail. Cast in the vicinity, a couple feet to the left, a couple feet to the right.
So you don't want to throw right on top of the fish.
No, you're going to spook him and you'll never catch that fish. He's going to take off 100 miles an hour.
Now, how amazing is that? You throw a chunk of a lead or a hook on his head and you expect him to eat. I mean, and he's going to get scared and run away. Now, that surprises me. I thought every creature in the world likes getting hit in the head to know their food's there.
Redfish are one of the most spookiest fish in the ocean. Literally here. If you shut your live well too loud, they will hear it. If you stomp around your boat too loud, they will hear it. They will literally go in lockjaw and they won't feed.
Okay, so you're standing on the front of the boat. Now, I like to try and make myself as small as possible, kind of crouch down a little bit. I don't make big movements with my arms when I go to cast. I kind of bring it back, flick my wrist, try and keep my movements as small as possible. Because,
try to keep your shadow.
Yeah, the calmer the water, the more they can see up through it, like the windshield in your car. If you're out there driving along, your windshield's nice and clear, you can see everything. But now a little bit of chop on the water, a little bit of light rain, they can't see you as much.
Also, your boat will change the current flow too. If you're parked up on the upflow of the current and you're fishing behind you, those fish sometimes will pick up on that current being changed by your boat.
All right, now explain that. How is the boat going to change the current? That's interesting.
In some of your narrow creeks, yep, and stuff like that, in the big open water, not so much, but some of those shallow creeks that he gets into, he's cast into some of those deeper potholes that are back farther, but he's anchored up in really shallow water, so that water pushes around and can kind of change a little bit of that flow.
So what you got to do is be really careful where you put your boat. Now,
that's a key thing.
Okay, you've got open water, it's very shallow, you got a lot of grass, and you're coming up to a set of islands, and you've got an island on your left, island on your right. Between those two islands, there's kind of a trough. Now, that's going to be prime redfish.
The water current's going to be the strongest between two islands.
So, it kind of makes a funnel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where would you place your boat? 30 feet back, 80 feet back?
Depending on the water color, if you're in very clear water, I'm going to stay 30, 40 feet back and try to make long casts with long rods. If you're in darker water, you could get a little bit closer to the fish because they can't see as well.
So how far away between the islands would you have to be where your boat really isn't going to spook them from the current, the change in current?
I would say about 30 feet. You'd probably be really good.
So you want to stay back 20, 30 feet from where you think the fish are.
Yes, sir.
Now, what I tend to do when I'm going around through an area with a lot of little islands and stuff is I go around the trolling motor, even on the outboard. I look for places, see fish, and go, okay. And then I look at how the bottom feature goes, if there's a trough, where the water's flowing, get all that mapped out in my head. Then I go looking for another place with fish.
We'll also look for what kind of bait and food sources in the area, too.
So
that's going to help you be able to catch those fish.
So if you're seeing a lot of crabs in there or a lot of minnows, you're going to throw minnows if there's minnow, yep, crabs if there's crabs.
There's a lot of pinfish, throw pinfish.
Yeah, so I'm going to find those fish, get an idea, get it mapped out in my head where I want to put my boat and everything. Then I leave. Mm-hmm. I go find another place with fish, get that one figured out. Then I go back to the first one and anchor up, because now I've let it sit for an hour or so, and I can come up nice and sneaky, anchor my boat, and get a good shot at those fish. And a lot of people, they find the fish and do that, and they want to stop and fish right away. It's not going to work.
No.
It takes 20 minutes on average for a fish to forget what just happened. You know, they learn repetitive behavior over time, but, you know, they, if something just happens, they kind of forget about it in about 20 minutes.
Yep.
But we're talking with Captain Carl and Robert here, and we've got just a little bit of time left, but we got to go. Somebody's got to pay for this stuff. Now, I'm not sure why everybody does it, but I'm glad they do it. Thank you for buying these ads. And Robert in the chair across from me, Captain Carl, KB Backcountry Charters. And we will be back. Okay, and we're back. This is Fish and Frank in the chair. We've got Robert across from me. This is, I got Captain Carl from KB Backcountry, except you got us. And we're here. We've been talking about how to get redfish, and we've kind of determined amongst the group that being about 30 feet away, a nice cut, nice moving water. Now, Robert, what would you rig up? How would you fish that?
Probably one of my more favorite ways is free lining, which is just my line, my leader, and my hook with no weight, no bobber, nothing at all, and just letting the bait drift as naturally as possible with the current.
And what size leader do you use, sir?
Usually about 30-pound test fluorocarbon.
Very good answer.
Okay. The thing is that sometimes that can be tricky depending on the area where you're fishing at, whether it's the wind or the tide isn't cooperating, and there's a whole lot of other techniques that go along with it. And I know Carl's got one that's super successful, and I've learned a couple new things from him in the past couple months over that. What about you, Carl?
My favorite way to fish for redfish is a Rockport Rattler. It's this new jig head that we started using down here. It's a company out of Texas. It's a jig head with a rattle inside of it. Mainly, most of the things that I do with that is I'll take a live shrimp, I'll pinch just a tail off the shrimp.
Now, I thought you were Southern boy, and Southern boys bite that tail off. They don't actually just pinch it off, they bite it off.
You can bite it if you want to.
It makes for a nice little protein boost in the middle of the day.
That is if you like sushi. Not a big sushi eater, though.
Well, that would be California sushi. So anyway, we've determined you take the tail off right where the flipper meets the main body of the shrimp.
Yep, the first joint.
Yeah, from where you would eat it, and then you got that little tail you hold on to when you eat it. So you put your rockport, tear that tail off, put your rockport in, how?
You feed it through the body where you tore the tail off, and you want to come out to where the hook starts bending, and then you start bend it up to the top of the shell.
So you're kind of rigging it up almost weedless, like a Texas rig style.
No, the hook's sticking out the top, but the reason why I hook it like that is because naturally a shrimp will pop backwards from a predator.
When he's scared
or he's trying to get away from something.
Afraid!
And another reason why I pinch the tail off is redfish are very keen on scent. That's how they mainly target food, is they smell the food and then they will come and find it.
So by ripping that tail off, it releases more of the juices, more of the stuff from the shrimp, so you get a better scent broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
People always get confused because they think fish, they kind of equate it like human scent abilities or smelling abilities, but fish actually are much more closer to dogs, where you can walk along the floor and or walk around the store here, and a dog can follow you where your skin cells hit the floor. And that's more like how a redfish would have for smelling ability, olfactory senses. I mean, even the tiniest bit of smell they can pick up from a long ways away.
Another thing that I do with those Rockport Rattlers, is like if I'm using live bait, like pinfish or white bait, I'll put a live bait on there.
Now, do you hook it through the nose or through the back?
I hook them through the nose, because then if you have a pinfish on and that's connected to the Rockport Rattler, he's going to be sitting with his face down like he's trying to bury himself in the ground. And he's just going to be sitting there fluttering in one spot 100 miles an hour.
So he's shaking the rattle for you.
Yep. He's doing all the work. And so a lot of times I like to trim the tail on him too.
So by doing all of that, you're not only creating a visual, but you're also adding scent and sound.
Mm-hmm. That's
so you're
key.
Kind of getting three really important things
hits in one. Okay.
It's just kind of interesting, because usually when you use one bait, it's doing one action and one action only, and to be able to achieve three different actions out of one particular way, it's pretty cool. Well, I mean, it diversifies it a lot.
You could actually, I mean, I also put it underneath the bobber, so I could float it underneath the mangrove wall. If it's, I need to get under the bushes, I could cast that bobber with the rock port on it and let line out and feed it underneath the mangroves.
Let the current take the float out there. Because yep. A lot of times when you're trying to throw the mangroves, one of the problems that you have is that I didn't set the timer for this, so I don't really know how much longer we've got to go, but I'm sure she'll let us know. But anyway, you can cast close to the mangroves and then just open your bail, feed a little line out, let the current take the float and the bait up towards the trees. Because if you're casting a float and a bait towards the trees, it tends to tumble in the air. Mm-hmm. And the bobber might land under the trees and the bait in the trees, or the bait under the trees and the bobber in the trees.
Yep.
Kind of a real pain that way. But if you cast close and let the current take it up in there, it's actually a much stealthier approach.
And especially in the summertime, a lot of your fish want to be in that shade. I want to be in the shade in the heat of the summer. The fish are the same way.
Yeah, and fish don't have eyelids. So if you don't have eyelids, you can't squint.
Exactly.
And so you want to get up in the shade. You want to look away from the sun and be more comfortable. One of the things that I like about this technique you're getting into with the floats is you can actually cast up along a shoreline and just let the current drift that bait all the way down the island. Cast up into the current and let it drift. It covers a lot of ground. Yep. Now, what color float are you? I see we've got every color float imaginable. What's the best colors?
Me personally, I like the green just because it mimics a mangrove leaf that fell off a tree. Sometimes if I'm using white, I won't get as many hits because it might stand out a little bit more in the water. But that green really blends in and it looks like a mangrove leaf.
Now, one of the problems I have with the white or the white and red is the redfish eating it. They'll come up and chew on the bobber. And I mean, I got to the point where I was using popping corks on them. I actually wanted to put a hook in the bobber because I was getting chunks of redfish taking bites out of my cork. So one of the ways to avoid that is to use the green colors, or like a, you can even take a marker and make your bobber black. Black is a really good color for floats if you don't want it seen, you don't want it eaten. Now, if you don't care, you just put the hook in the bobber and go pop it around. I mean, one of the great ways to find redfish, I think, would be topwater lures.
They tend to have a hard time eating it because their mouths are designed for bottom feeding. But I mean, it's an excellent way to find them because you.
Well, let's get into more of that during the next one. We're just running out of time in this segment, but this is Fish and Frank in the chair. Robert across from me, Captain Carl. We're Fish and Franks, and I got to tell you, liking it. I'm liking it. Yes, I am. Or a couple of seconds. I guess that's us. Oh my goodness. I'm not really sure which one these go to. We're trying to get all these things together here and work on this, but we're going to try and see what happens. Anyway, we've been talking about redfish. Fish and Frank in the chair here. You got me. That's Robert in the chair across from me and Captain Carl from KB Backcountry Charters. And we've been discussing how redfish eat. I like looking for redfish with topwater lures. It's next impossible to get them to hit on it, but if they do hook up, they got to come all the way up out of the water, make this big swirl because they're back. Almost all the fish has to be out of the water to connect to that topwater. So I like using a couple of plugs. I have one sitting ready with something on it, but I'm throwing that topwater, maybe a skitter walk or a Spook Junior or one of those. It's got to be a walk the dog style to me. That's the best ones. What kind of other lure would you have? You're casting that mangroves, working for it. What would you think is good, Robert? What's your backup? What's really going to get them to hook up?
I love catching them on top water just because it's so exciting, because they usually have to crash on it 3 or 4 times before they actually hit it.
That's always the cool part.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it right on the head, like a Spook Junior or even the Zip and Ziggy is a really good one too. You know, little smaller profile baits. You know, when the big bull reds show up, those fish will gobble up a very large top water lure. But, you know, an old school trick with some fish is they put that little teaser, they'll hang it off that bag treble hook with a little grub tail on it that suspends down in the water column, so you'll be able to pick up those fish that short strike it, but turn around and grab the little grub tail that's hanging off the back of it, which can be pretty exciting.
And Carl, what do you throw for redfish? You're using a topwater, and if you're going to have a secondary rod, you're working that top water across away from the mangroves, and all of a sudden, boom, big boil. What do you do?
Sometimes I'll have a MR19. I love a mirror lure MR19. It's kind of like a top water, but it suspends a little bit under the surface. Also, I like gulps. Gulp baits are great. They're very scented. New penny color is my favorite one.
So what I do is I'll give a quick reel to the rod, set it in the rod holder, grab the other one, and cast right where I saw the boil. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're using a gulp, how do you work in it? I'm casting maybe 6 feet past the boil, trying to work into that spot. And what do you do?
Most of the time, first cast, I'll try to work it a little faster, just because you're working that top water a little fast, and they came and hit a fast-moving bait. If that doesn't work, then I'll cast it back out, and I'll slowly jig it off the bottom. That fish was hungry, so he's looking for something to eat.
Now, to me, when I'm throwing a jig, one of the big things is getting it to hop up a little bit, not drag along the bottom. So I'm lifting my rod, not jerking it sideways, actually taking the tip and coming up with it so I get a good hop, and then I let that jig head slam back into the bottom, puff some sand.
If you go side to side with the jig, when you're trying to jig it side to side, it's going to drag through the grass. You're going to bring in a big wad of grass on it, and those fish are never going to see it. You have to literally go straight up and down when you're popping it.
And give it a nice hop up, and then once it hits the bottom, that's when I'm collecting my slack. The danger part in that is if they hit it while I'm collecting my slack, I'm a little behind on setting the hook.
Yes. Redfish, sometimes they will hit it like they'll hit it like a freight train. Other times they'll be picking at it like a snapper. They don't feed all the time the same way. They're very tricky fish.
And another thing too about redfish is that I describe them all the time to people that it's basically this similar to a carp and a bass that got together and had a good time, because
this is the evil spawn of a carp and a bass.
Yeah, I mean, their feeding habits are very similar to a carp. They grub along the bottom and mill around, but they will take any type of artificial in a heartbeat. You know, they just are.
What's your favorite lures for redfish, Robert?
I'm horrible at it, but if I had one lure to pick to go after redfish, it would be a weedless gold spoon.
Like a minnow, Johnson minnow?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just, it's...
Half ounce, three quarter ounce?
Half ounce or quarter ounce.
Oh, so you like the small ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because the only time I know I can catch redfish is in the late summer, and they really like that quarter ounce. Seems to be a little bit more productive.
All right, what's your retrieve on it? You getting it quick, or you...
Well, the reason why I picked the weedless is because I can either hop it on the bottom, I can jig it, moderate retrieve it, faster retrieve it. I can cover all areas of the water column and not get it snagged up as much as one with, a treble hook on it.
Now, to me, when I'm putting the spoon on, I just straight out, I use the AFW ball bearing snap swivel.
Mm-hmm.
I put that right on the end of
Absolutely.
It. It's part of the lure after that. I never even take it off. But it's got to be a ball bearing, because if it's a regular swivel, it won't swivel. It doesn't do you any good. But I don't want my line all twisted up, so I use that ball bearing swivel. Now, Carl, what's your favorite? If you got to pick a lure, what are you going to pick?
If I had to pick a lure for redfish, I'd probably go with a gulp shrimp. Just because, I mean, you could put it under a bobber.
So now it doesn't have a hook or anything. And what do you... You got to finish that out.
A weedless worm hook. Sometimes I'll use one with a weight just to cast it out.
I would have thought he was
going to
go with the rock port. I'm sitting here thinking, okay, he's going to talk about a rock port and a gulp shrimp. But you use the gulp shrimp with the weedless hook.
Yeah, just because most of the time where I'm fishing, it's going to be really grassy. And working that lure, I'm really dragging it on the bottom. I'm really popping it in and out of the grass.
You're using a weighted worm hook?
Depending on the situation.
Come on, we're trying to figure out the specific, what would be the one, weighted or unweighted?
Most of the time, unweighted, just because you don't want to scare the fish with this loud.
All right, this is, but you got Fish and Frank here, you got Robert in the chair across from me. Yeah, I almost forgot your name after 17 years of working together. And we got Captain Carl KB Backcountry Charters here, and we'll be back very quickly. Don't go away! Don't do it! Don't go away! I guess we're back. Okay, that was quick. Sorry about the little delay there. We're here. This is in a very surprise Fish and Frank here, and that's fishandfranks.com if you want to check out who I am. And no G in Southern Fishing, by the way. And Robert in the chair across from me, Captain Carl from KB Backcountry Charters here. And we're down here broadcasting from the studios in downtown Charlotte Harbor, kind of set. We've been talking about redfish for the last hour and what kind of lures, and we kind of got Robert down to a gold spoon, quarter ounce gold spoon with a AFW ball bearing snap swivel on it, and you're into a gulp shrimp with about a 3-aught unweighted weedless worm hook on it. And I think that kind of brings us to the point of this next thing, is what do you like throwing for a lure? Are you a bass fisherman in Missouri? Are you up by D.C. looking through there? Are you Boston fishing the freshwater? I mean, pick your favorite lure. It probably works on a redfish. I would say the main difference, it would be between fishing for bass and fishing for redfish, is about 2 feet of 25-pound test fluorocarbon leader.
Correct.
I think the same rods, same reels.
It's such a phenomenal crossover fish going from largemouth bass fishing to red fishing because the structure, the habits of them are very, very similar as far as locations where you find them. It's just saltwater versus freshwater. But all those lures work. You know, a lip diving bait such as like a Rapala Original works fine.
The Cotton Cordell, the old Rippling Redfin with the gold color on it. One of my all-time favorites.
Absolutely.
But the X-Wrap would be a very modern, good version of mm-hmm. that. I'm going to say the OG.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a killer.
They're just so phenomenal to target in every Gulf State, all the way up to, I want to say they actually go all the way up to as far as Rhode Island. They'll find them in the back
markers. I don't think anything goes to Rhode Island. Rhode Island.
So small, they just bypass it.
But, oh, I was there. No, I wasn't. But anyway, if you're in the Carolinas fishing for redfish, using big chunk bait crabs, you use a big surf rod, you pitch them way out in the surf out there. And that's a completely different type of red fishing than what we do here until you get into the Gulf. And then it's almost identical.
I do know that up in North Carolina, fishing the surfish, they do like throwing a lot of big topwater baits. I've talked to a lot of my clients that I've fished with, and they've told me that they fish a lot of topwater baits, reeling them really fast in the surf.
So
they said they come up and slam them hard.
Wow. So
and up there, that's the bull reds that we're talking about. We're talking 30-plus pound fish because that's where the world record comes from.
Okay. Well, we're going to get into more different things on different fishing. And believe it or not, this Fishing Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and Captain Carl from KB Backcountry Charters, we're talking redfish today. This is Fishing Frank in the chair. You lucky devils, you got me again. Yeah, well, you may feel lucky, you may not. We got Robert in the chair across from me, world-renowned. I mean, when they come here to do research on different fish and stuff, almost inevitably Robert gets the call. He's on the boat with him. He's kind of a world-renowned encyclopedia of fish. And then we've got Captain Carl from KB Backcountry Charters. He is at 941-565-7325. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
You want to say your number again?
941-565-7325.
Okay, that's Captain Carl from KB Backcountry Charters. We're talking redfish today. And we were talking about in Carolina how you're talking about madly pulling some crazy topwater lures in the surf there. And to me, it seems like I would be throwing a weight and a big chunk of crab out there.
That's what I would be doing. I mean, that's crab is my favorite bait. I love crab. It's throwing candy in the water. They don't resist it. They're going to smell it from a good bit away, and they're going to come and find it.
Okay, let's get back to crabs in a minute. Now, Robert, you can go from one extreme, like fishing in off the continental shelf right off Carolinas, where it's got a deep drop, surf fishing, big plugs and all that, to where would you go?
Louisiana.
Okay.
Louisiana is a totally different fishery than anywhere else as far as where redfish are concerned. You've got so many hundreds of thousands of miles of marshes and creeks and bayous, and you've been there. I mean, you've worked up there. And
yeah, I was there at the Deepwater Horizon, the oil spill, working boats up there.
The variety of fish there and how dumb the redfish are there from one extreme to the other.
Yeah, here you can't, you get within 100 feet of them and you got to start being, you know, super sneaky, you know, mouse style, creeping up on them. Over there, what I said earlier about not hitting them in the head, it's okay in Louisiana. Throw it right on their head.
Yeah.
They're going to go, oh, gee, food.
Yeah, I mean, like Carl was saying, you know, you got to be careful about anchoring up in a creek. Some of these guys go up into creeks that are literally just barely wide enough for their boat to get into, and redfish are literally swimming towards the boat to get out of the creek and they drop a jig right in front of them and they eat it. I mean, B.B. King could catch a fish there. You know, all you do is say, drop your lure right in the water and move it. And that's it.
That's why chatterbaits work up there. These fish are
super.
You get
aggressive.
Noisy stuff and they're very aggressive. Chatterbait down here means the fish is going to end up in Louisiana.
Yeah,
you're
going to
scare the heck out of them. Yeah. We don't use them at all.
Yeah, you'll watch them run until their wake disappears and get your binoculars out and they're still running.
But I love Louisiana, the Mississippi area, Alabama. They've unbelievable fisheries up there, and everybody's north from us. They're all Yankees. I don't care what part of they're from. We're so far. Well, I guess they're actually southern. We're so far south, we're part of the north, I think. But I love that fishery up there because you got so many marshes, and you take a jerkbait, the same as you would use for bass fishing. And if you go back all the way, the old Sluggos, I guess, was the first one to come out with it, and use these weedless jerkbaits. You pitch them right up into the weeds, get them and start twitching it out, and as it clears the weeds, they see it, and boom, it hooks up.
And they even use a lot of frogs down there. They use a lot of topwater frogs, those soft plastic frogs, and work them across some of that hydrilla and milfoil. Because they're in such extreme brackish water that literally one cast you're catching a largemouth bass and the next cast you are catching a big redfish.
That's like fishing here in the Peace River.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you can go up on the river and I get up around Horse Creek and I get in a little cutoff past up there and it's a snook, it's a bass, a crappie, a redfish. You know, it's just such a mixture of fresh and salt water right at that one point.
Exactly.
And coming closer to us, it's not, but you get further up. But bringing it back to Florida a little bit, out here in the Gulf, we get these migrating schools. Usually what? What months are they here, Robert?
September and October are the 2 months where they really show up in phenomenal numbers. People don't realize redfish are technically kind of a pelagic fish, which means they are an offshore roaming nomadic fish. They primarily move inshore to spawn, and that's where their babies grow up. But as they mature, they move out into the Gulf of Mexico and go literally from Texas all the way up to past the Carolinas, staying in anywhere from 30 to 150 feet of water.
And so these fish, that you could catch a redfish here and find that same tagged fish in the Carolinas or up in the northern Gulf part. I guess if you live anywhere else, it's in the southern region of the Gulf, but it's hard because everything's north from here. But we've only got a little bit left, but we're going to be coming back and talking about more of fishing them in the deep waters of the Gulf, because redfish, they cruise that bottom, and you catch a lot trolling for grouper, which we're going to get into. And I'm Fishing Frank, by the way, and that's fishingfranks.com if you want to look it up. Remember, no G in Southern Fishing. And we are from Fishing Franks down here in Charlotte Harbor, Florida, broadcasting from our beautiful studios. Robert's in the chair across from me. Captain Carl, KB Backcountry Charters, 941-565-7325. And we are going to be back in just a little while with lots more about redfish and some really cool stuff. Yes, sir. I'm Fishing Frank, and we are in Charlotte Harbor, Florida, broadcasting from the studios therein and thereof. And we've got Robert in the chair across from me and Captain Carl from KB Backcountry Charters here. We're talking redfish today. And we've kind of talked about the Carolinas and all that, and Louisiana. It's just all those places, such amazing fisheries. But right here in the Gulf of Mexico, we got about 3 months out of the year, September, October, maybe even into November sometimes. They were here a long time this year. Fishing them in the Gulf of Mexico is really different than being up on the flats where they're spooky and tricky. How do you fish them, Carl? What do you do when you know those big redfish are out there?
In the deep water, it is going to be harder fishing for the redfish than in the shallow water, just because they're always moving in that deep water. But what I like to do is I like to throw cut ladyfish, cut mullet, crabs. The thing about the redfish in the deep water is a lot of times you're not going to see them. They're going to be down low. So when you do get into
how deep of water are we fishing in the Gulf for them?
You could be 20, 30 feet all the way up to 100 feet of water.
So in 20, 30 feet, you still have a chance of seeing them, because they're going to look like a dark mat coming across the bottom, because they bunch up. And there's going to be 50, 100, 500 fish in that school. And so can you see them on a depth finder?
If you have a good depth finder, like a side scanner and stuff, you can see them pretty easy with that. If they're down low, I'll throw a lot of cut bait, like cut crab, cut mullet, sardines.
Now, are you using a sinker with this?
Yes, you got to sink it down to the bottom. If not, the bait's just going to float.
And it's not going to get to the fish in time. All right, now, do you keep the boat moving or you anchor up? How are you doing this?
most of the time you're going to have to keep the boat moving. They're not going to sit in one spot most of the time.
So you're almost like on a slow troll with this.
Troll, or if you have a trolling motor, you could use a trolling motor.
So are you dragging your bait across the bottom?
No, you just drop it down, kind of like your grouper fishing. I mean, you will pick up grouper and everything else while you're out there in a deep water, too.
I think that's how this got to be really popular. People going out trolling for grouper, and bycatch was these huge redfish. So when you're trolling for a grouper, Robert, you kind of do a little bit of the trolling. I know I'm like the trolling guru guy, but
you are.
Yeah, but I know I am.
Your knowledge is a lot more than mine, but
I'm trying to be a little modest here, okay. But you know it ain't working. You know, yes, I'm God. Okay, yeah, no, I'm not. But anyway, what do you do for trolling out there?
For trolling out there, a lot of times we use a lot of the depth-specific lures, like say the Man Stretch 30 or the Rapala 30. Those lures will dive up to 30 feet just with a certain amount of scope in your line, but with a little bit of practice and a lot more scope or a lot more line let out, you can get those lures to dive up to 30 feet, especially with braid line becoming so popular nowadays.
Yeah, if you switch over to braid, you can do 30. I'd recommend 40-pound test braid, because 30 just really doesn't get it when it comes to braid and strength. Fold the end over, double your lineup before you tie your knot, you stand a chance with the 30. Right. But let's say you're doing 40-pound braid. It's much thicker than the 20-pound mono, or much thinner, rather, than the 20-pound mono they test these lures with.
Correct.
So you're going to get a lot more depth just by switching to the braided line.
A lot less line drag.
What I try and do with me, I don't know how you feel about it, but I let them go until I see it kind of tagging the bottom. Correct. And I'll see kind of a bump to the rod, and you get that tip to kind of flex up and pull back down and flex up, pull back down. I'm going to bring back just a little bit of line to get that lure running, tracking straight again, but as close to the bottom as possible.
Yeah, I like to be within probably about within 5 feet of the bottom.
We're talking about bottom feeding fish here, so it all makes sense, don't you know?
Right, but there are times too where those fish will actually sit up real close to the surface, and you'll just literally be looking and you'll see a big gold mat sitting out there where they're just cruising close to the surface, and they'll hit a spoon. I mean, we've gone out there looking for bonita and cast into a school of bonita that are blitzing on the surface and start pulling up large redfish in the next center with them.
When the blitz goes on, because the level of the water, it's all here's flat, and then you see the school of fish and the water, the froth, actually comes up a foot, 2 foot above the regular surface of the water just from them foaming so much. And you're pulling redfish out of those with the bonita?
Yeah. I mean, it amazed me. I did it 2 years ago for the very first time. I had heard about it from so many customers. But to experience, I thought I had a bonita on, and looked down, and it's probably a 30, 32-inch redfish, and we ended up catching several more just on a spoon and ripping it, I mean, as fast as you can possibly rip. And we were in like 40 feet of water then, so I mean, it was pretty amazing.
It's actually very cool
to see
it,
because I get to live vicariously through a lot of other fishermen and hear it all the time, so you get learn a lot of stuff from other fishermen and to actually personally do it. It was awesome.
The colors are so different out there, because they're so gold and white, and they got blue highlights, and they're just gorgeous. I think the only reason they're called redfish is because goldfish was taken.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, otherwise, they're so gold and they're so beautiful. I think, you know, otherwise they'd be called goldfish, you know, the goldfish of the sea, because they're absolutely gorgeous bronze colors. Now, Carl, have you been able to get in on that?
I've got into them once or twice offshore. I don't venture out there too much looking for redfish, but I mean, I have.
Is it scary out there?
No. I do a lot of offshore fishing. It's a lot harder finding those fish out in that deeper water.
Yeah, a lot of times it's incidental catch. You go out there at the right time of year, like you said, September and October are going to be the primary months where you are going to run into them, and they're constantly moving in and out of the harbor. You know, they'll rush in, do a little bit of spawning, school up a little bit, and then they move right back offshore again, and then they'll come back in, and it has nothing to do with the moon phase. They just actually come in here in groups and then go right back out.
Well, they come in to do the baby thing, and then they go back out. And they're picking up any young ones that are big enough to travel with the adult schools at that time.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, we've been talking redfish here, but you got Fish and Frank and Robert and Carl from KB Backcountry Charters. In the chair here is Fish and Frank, your guest host, and in the chair across from me is Robert, world-renowned, and Carl from Captain KB Backcountry Charters. I'm getting it all out there. We're talking redfish, and I like everything they just said. Prop baits, they're killers. The Head and Torpedo, the Smithwick Devil Horse, man, they just rock. I love them. Absolutely. Even the 5M mirror lure is great. But going, redfish will accept almost any lure. I mean, it's just crazy how many different ways you can fish for them. How do you get into redfish? What do you come across, and if you're going to describe them, what are they eating-wise?
Redfish, they are scavengers. They're going to follow your mullet. They're going to follow stingrays. Reason why is because those mullet and stingrays, they're stirring up the bottom, and it's making it easy for those redfish to come find your crabs, your shrimp, your
Am I allowed fish. To talk about the stingray Pez dispenser on here? No, I think we'll hold that off for another one. Okay, but anyway, they're following the stingrays, the manatees, all these other things. Yeah, that's me. Okay, but Carl, I didn't mean to get you there, buddy. So they're following these stingrays going along. What's going on?
What they do is the mullet and the stingrays, they're stirring the bottom up. And
Robert's still dying. Yeah, I could. How much more politically incorrect could I possibly be? Okay, they're stirring up the bottom.
It's making it easy for the redfish to find them. They don't have to dig so hard. They don't have to put so much effort into finding the fish because those mullet and stingrays, they're just stirring the bottom up. And the redfish, they'll just follow those schools of fish, and it's easy food for them.
Nice and easy to take over with.
Yep.
Now, what's your take on the redfish? Now, I remember when redfish was a trash fish. When I first moved down here back in the 70s, I come up in the bank. Here's a guy catching them, and he's catching these fish, and I just come from commercial fishing, and I'd never seen any that fish before, I didn't think. And he's throwing them on the bank in a pile, and I'm like, what are those? Oh, that's a saltwater carp. They ain't good for anything.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, when I didn't know any different. The only redfish that I had ever seen were the big ones, the 30, 60 pounders as a commercial fisherman. And I'd never seen them young before. And it was funny how it all changed.
Amazing what you can do when you blacken a fish.
One guy comes up with a recipe, and all of a sudden the world changes. All of a sudden it's the most amazing fish, most spectacular fish. And it really is. Takes almost every lure, all kinds of different bait. Frustrating as heck, fun to catch,
and great table fare.
Oh yeah, they're good to eat.
I mean, it was underrated for many, many years, and now I mean, people target them for both sport and for food.
And I like the sport aspect. I think they're so stupid. I mean, the dumbest fish in the world when it comes to the top water. They shouldn't even be trying. But you know, you're gonna give them points for like an A for effort. Okay, I'm gonna get my whole butt out of the water, swirl around that, look like a fool, and miss it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just the way it goes with redfish.
Yeah,
but.
Well, and also, I mean, just like you said, it's the lure aspect and the varieties of lures that they'll hit and the varieties of dead bait and live bait that they'll hit. I mean, it's everything. They'll hit cut mullet, cut ladyfish. I mean, I wouldn't be willing to bet that they would eat a chicken bone.
I would be willing to bet. Now, we've caught grouper on chicken, and we're going
to, when we go to,
yeah, so they'd almost have to. Now, Carl, you're big into the crabs. Why don't you, just because that's a key ingredient to really doing well on a lot of redfish, a lot of places, how do you hook up a crab? Let's say a blue crab.
Well, blue crab, I like to use the eaten ones, the ones that a lot of people like to eat. I'll never eat a blue crab just because it's such good redfish bait.
So how big are you talking? 3 inches across the shell, four inches, 6 inches?
About the 5-6 inches. The reason why is because when you turn a crab upside down, it looks like he has a six-pack on his belly. What I do is I split him in half with a knife, and I peel off the top shell. And then I'll crack off one or two of the legs right next to the body, and I feed the hook through the cartilage there, and that crab won't ever come off.
So you're going in through the legs, because between the legs is soft. Otherwise, he'd be like a mechanical man. You know, he'd never be able to move. So you go between the legs with the hook and out through the meat, and that keeps it on there really good. And that's probably the best way to fish crabs.
At crabs, I mean, you throw a crab in the water, you're going to catch a big redfish. They will not
pass that
up. I've
done it in Titusville, done it in Port Charlotte, I've done it everywhere like that.
I wish they weren't so expensive. I mean, I'd be fishing with them every single day.
Okay, one of the things about it, but I am your guest host, Fish and Frank, And I've been at Fish and Frank's Bait and Tackle for 29 years, folks. And yes, I'm the old dog in the business. Robert's been with me 16, almost 17 years now. Is it 16 years, Robert?
16 years and a month.
16 years and a month. So, okay, 16 years and a month. Captain Carl is one of the young guys with us, and he does inshore redfish, snook, trout, tarpon, sharks. He does all these different charters. He's KB Backcountry Charters. You want to get a hold of him, it's 941-565-7325. Or just go to fishandfranks.com, and you can find out all about us. It's fishinfranks.com. And that's me. I am Fish and Frank.
Or also feel free to call us if you have any questions or anything like that.
We're always here to help out.
941-625-388 is the store number if you're coming to Florida, or if you just want help with anything. Next week, we're going to be back with a whole different fish. We're not really sure what it is, but each week, we're going to target a fish somewhere in the country, somewhere in the world. And Fish and Frank in the chair here, this is here. Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Carl. And I appreciate you guys doing the show with us. We'll look forward to seeing you next, or talking to you next week. I'm standing real close to the microphone, so you should be able to see me really well. So anyway, we'll see you guys next week, and out. Bye, y'all.